this is Dabney Beasy, and you're listening to the Westminster Standard, which is the podcast of Jude 3. The podcast is on a fortnightly schedule, so this episode is a little bit early. Thanks for listening to my dad's podcast, and I hope you enjoy. Please remember, the opinions and views expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of Jude 3 and the PCA, or any particular church court. Any questions about statements made on this program should be directed to the individual speaker directly. The Westminster Standard podcast does not edit guests because of their contact, and simply because a guest makes a statement on this program does not necessarily indicate that view is endorsed by the WS Pod, Jude 3, the PCA, or anyone other than the person who said it. Thank you for understanding and being the best subscribers ever. Please enjoy this episode.
Hello, this is the Westminster Standard. I'm Ryan Beasy. Welcome to the program. I'm joined today by Ruling Elder Ross Harris and Ruling Elder Charlie Knave. Ross, thanks for joining the program.
Excited to be here. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome. Glad to have you. Ross, you're a ruling elder, and today we are highlighting the work of Moore in the PCA. So would you give us a little bit of your background? How did you come to the PCA?
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit, as you can imagine, for a lot of people that don't grow up in the PCA, it's a little bit of a longer story. But the short of it, I was raised in a gospel-believing, faithful, church-attending, evangelical home, and very, very grateful for my upbringing. My parents heartily served the church, and so, you know, in a lot of ways, I think that they really modeled the type of commitment that I hope to exhibit as well in my work as a ruling elder. But around college, had started to become a little bit more in the young, restless, and reform camp, as many do in my age bracket of early to mid 30s, and shortly thereafter got a job at Grove City College, where you're an alum and my wife is an alum. And when I got there, I started looking for churches, and there weren't really any churches that were particular Baptist in their theology. So I started looking around, ended up at an evangelical Presbyterian church, actually, because they were a little bit more tolerant of credo Baptists at the time, and still are. My wife actually ended up there separately because they're a little bit more open to their continuationist, and she was coming from a Pentecostal background. So we both ended up there separately, but throughout that process got exposed to Reformed theology in a more robust form. And then, like many people, I was also very much affected by Ligonier and getting to listen to Ligonier tapes and buying their DVDs and such. And so, through that process, I ended up I had heard of the PCA through, you know, hearing that R.C. Sproul was a PCA TE. And actually, when I was working at Grove City College, I had a bunch of PCA pastors' sons that worked for me. And I didn't know a whole lot about it, but they really seemed to know their stuff, and they knew a lot more than I did. And so, and you know, now knowing they were catechized, who would have thought? But anyway, so I ended up, they were kind of asking good questions when I was thinking through things as well, although I was supervising them at the time. I've been able to run into several of their dads at GA the last couple of years, actually, which has been really neat. But when we left Grove City, I was a residence director, was getting kind of worn down with receiving 3 a.m. phone calls, and at that point, had a baby and was already getting a different type of 3 a.m. phone call or different type of call. So ended up getting a job at where I work now, Brotherhood Mutual Insurance Company. And when we moving back to Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is my hometown, and heard providentially that there was a PCA church there. And so my wife and I emailed the pastor and said, hey, we're interested in becoming members. We hadn't moved yet, and been at Providence Presbyterian Church ever since in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Greatly benefited from teaching and preaching of our teaching elder, Tony Garbarino. And so have really benefited from that church's ministry overall. And I've been a ruling elder there since 2019. So I've been a ruling elder for 4 or 5 years now.
Wow. And you've got how many children now?
I've got 5 kids. The oldest is 7 and the youngest is 1. So a lot going on.
Yeah, I remember seeing your 1-year-old last year at GA. Yeah. I think your wife was at in the overture. Your kid was so good. And I was just, you know, my family was away, and we have a kid about the same age. And just looking, yeah. Like, oh man, I miss my kids. Yeah. But your kids seem to sleep better than ours do. So
I don't think we can take any credit for that. That seems more, it just happened.
It's totally random. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And so you've been a ruling elder since 2019. Charlie, welcome. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. I am on session at Harvestwood Covenant Presbyterian Church in glorious Floyd, Virginia.
Mm. And you're on a church plant temporary session as well. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. I am on the temporary session for Providence Presbyterian Church, which is currently meeting at the American Legion Hall in Salem, Virginia.
Wonderful. So both of you are actively serving the church on the local and presbytery level. Charlie, how did you come to the PCA?
Well, I grew up in the PCUS, and while I was a teenager, we joined the PCUSA, and what I perceived of as growing liberalism in the church just accelerated. Until I went to college and essentially walked away from the PCUSA altogether. And I was worshiping at Southern Baptist churches, along the way got married, continued worshiping at Southern Baptist churches. And then we moved to Roanoke 20 years ago and tried 3 different sizable Southern Baptist churches around here. And neither of them were a great fit. And there was a PCA church plant in town that some friends been to and spoke highly of. And so we thought we'd give it a chance. And we were there for 14 years.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So long and faithful service for that presbytery. How are you both serving at GA this year? Are either of you on committee of commissioners yet? Or do you know?
Well, our presbytery is meeting a week from Saturday, and we'll be selecting elders for the committees of commissioners then. And I expect to be appointed to at least one.
At least one. Ross, are you?
Yeah, I'm. Last I heard, I'm on the Covenant College committee.
Okay, I was on that one 2 years ago. They won't give you a tie or a shirt. You got to bring your own.
Well, that's too bad. I would have really liked one, but that's good to know. Yeah.
I think I'm on PCA Foundation this year, and I'm expecting to get a free pen. So,
you get some of that Bitcoin.
That's what you need to get. Yeah. But Charlie, you are one of the founders, maybe the founder of More in the PCA. And can you tell me about More? When was it founded? Why was it founded? What is it all about?
Well, I was ordained as a ruling elder in, I believe, late 2016, and I started serving in 2017 and went to my first General Assembly that year, which was in Greensboro, and I was just kind of appalled at the small number of ruling elders there, especially in comparison to the large number of teaching elders. And, I'm an attorney and I serve nonprofits and fundraisers. That's primarily my client base. And one of the things I do is I will organize C3s and get their tax exempt status. And I thought, well, you know, I could put together an organization to collect donations from all over the country and the denomination to help ruling elders with the expenses of going to GA. There are many reasons to not go to GA, but you can at least address the financial hurdles with other people's donations. And I thought, you know, that would be just a small way to encourage greater ruling elder participation in General Assembly. And I was hoping to be able to pass it off to somebody else who was just as interested in this as I was. But once I got it up and running in late 2017, I started running it, and I've been running it ever since.
Turns out no one was as interested as you were.
Apparently not, no. There is no executive director that we can point to.
I see. So who are some of the other leaders? Is there anyone who's almost as interested in this project as you are?
Well, we have two other board members, and we've got an advisory board. Given what's gone on in the past, with some of our confessional elders being attacked online, I don't like to broadcast people's names that much. I don't like them to suffer, you know, in social media. But I will say that Brad Isbell is one of our directors. He's pretty well known in our circles, and he's made it well known that he's on our board. But we've been really encouraged by the amount of people who do rally to this cause and help us out, not just financially, but also in, you know, reviewing applications and recommending who is really deserving of financial assistance and help getting to General Assembly.
Mm, yeah. And Ross, you're one of those elders, I think, that Moore has helped ascend to GA. How did you get connected with Moore?
Yeah, so this will be this will actually be my third year where Moore and the PCAs helped me out. I was thinking about where I had first heard about it, and I'm not able to perfectly place it, but I think it was through Confessing Our Hope, which was Zach Groff and Dr. Joey Pipa's Greenville podcast years ago. I mean, I think they still do some version of it, but when it was affiliated with Greenville. And so I don't even know if they had announced the name at that point, but they had started at least doing whispers of that there was an organization that was going to be helping ruling elders. And so somehow at some point I found out which organization it was. And so 2 years ago, Moore paid for my registration. And then last year they paid for my registration as well. I'm in a little bit of a unique situation in that, I work for one of, the exhibitors at PCA General Assembly. So I work for Brotherhood Mutual Insurance, and we always have a booth there. And so I've found it, I've tried to be a wise steward and trying to overlap things as much as possible. So Brotherhood has sent me to work the booth, and they've paid for a lot of my expenses, but, so the previous years, just been able to need to request the registration fee. This year, with me working on a committee, I'm not able to work the booth, and so Moore is helping me out with hotel costs. And so, although I'm still found out a way for I'm transporting the materials to the booth this year for Brotherhood. So that's paying for the travel.
Can you say mileage?
Yes, exactly. So, tried to scrap it all together. So
that's great stewardship. And, you know, our book allows, you know, each congregation to send two ruling elders in addition to their teaching elders, but often it's financially prohibitive, for a lot of normal, ordinary sized PCA churches to send even one ruling elder, much less the two that they would be allowed. So I'm thankful for Moore and the churches and individuals that are working to raise funds to send guys like Ross and your whole family's coming, right?
Yeah. So, well, the oldest two kids, we're leaving the three younger ones with their grandparents, but,
Wise decision.
Yeah. I think that'd be a little bit too much to ask, but.
Yeah. Well, how does Moore prepare ruling elders? We'll get into some of the fundraising aspect, in a little bit, later, but how does Moore prepare ruling elders to attend and understand? I took a whole class in seminary on polity. It was taught by Guy Waters, and we learned, you know, a lot of the ropes of assemblies, whether Presbytery or GA. But how does Moore help to prepare the ruling elders to understand what's going on and why it's important to be present at General Assembly, Charlie?
Well, we do a Zoom and maybe one or two emails leading up to General Assembly. We're certainly not encouraging people to vote a certain way on anything before the assembly. So there wouldn't be any education on that. It's more along the lines of the logistics of getting there and going to being in the right place at the right time and how important it is. I mean, we're just not Presbyterian if the ruling elders aren't there.
Yeah.
We're an essential part of our polity. I think the debate and discussion is very much improved by having ruling elders in the assemblies, in the courts of the church, because we bring a perspective. I like to call it a real world perspective to a lot of the issues we consider. And the cases we sometimes decide, because, you know, a lot of teaching elders just kind of get sucked into ministry world and an ivory tower perspective. And, you know, they're not necessarily grappling with these real world issues and seeing how it plays out on the average person in the pew's life.
You know, that's an interesting point that you raise. Jesus, when he was calling his disciples, he didn't call all, you know, people who had worked in the academy or even clerical jobs like Matthew, Levi. He called fishermen as well. So there is a diversity of perspectives that the Holy Spirit uses in the work of the church. And mm-hmm. so that I think is borne out by our polity. Now, Moore throws the best party at General Assembly every year. Is that correct?
That is scientifically proven. Yeah, and we've had a little bit of a curveball thrown at us this year. Normally, we try to have a party on Wednesday night when everyone else is having a party, basically. But the Gospel Reformation Network has moved its annual lunch to dinner time, which is basically the same time when we were going to have our event, and we had one all set up. And we want the same people to be able to go to both events. So we decided to move ours to later in the evening. And I'll announce here for the first time that we're going to be having our event at from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Wednesday night, which is the 12th. It's going to be at the Commonwealth Club, which is probably it's less than a mile from the convention site. It's going to be closer for some people than others because we're at hotels all over downtown. But we're expecting that people are probably a lot of people are going to want to go to the GRN dinner because Rosaria Butterfield is speaking. They're going to want to go home, go back to their hotel rooms, maybe change because they've been at the assembly all day long. So we didn't want to start this immediately after the GRN thing, especially since we didn't know when it was going to end. we'll be at the Commonwealth Club, and Zach Groff will be entertaining us with his new song, and hopefully we can get him to play the old one as well. And the great thing about the Commonwealth Club is that it's got a patio, I understand. And if you want to bring your cigars or pipes, you can enjoy a little tobacco with your refreshment in the evening. And you know, the main point of this is to is for ruling elders to network with other ruling elders so that you're going to want to come back to General Assembly. The first one is the hardest one. And if you come back to your second or third or subsequent General Assembly, it's a lot easier if you see an old friend because you made friends at a previous one. So that's what we're trying to foster is, you know, all these teaching elders, they've got friends from previous calls or seminary or whatever, because this is, you know, their job every day. But the ruling elders need to network as well. And, you know, having a social time really facilitates that.
Yeah, that's where Ross and I where we met for the first time, or had we known each other previously? I know your wife and I went to college for a little bit.
Yes, together. You overlapped a little bit. I think the first time we met was at the Birmingham. Okay, we were at the same table with Dominic Aquila, and so that was a great time. It is scientifically proven the best party at GA. I am also excited that there was a little bit of the shift in the time. My wife's a huge fan of Rosario Butterfield, and so she's going to be actually at the GRN luncheon, and so I'll be watching the two older kids for that. But then we're going to switch off so I can go to the Moore party later. So that works out well for me.
All right. Well, be on the lookout for an Eventbrite, hopefully on Monday, so that people can get tickets and get all the details. Great. So. But thank you for giving me the opportunity to promote this for the first time.
Will you have a link on the website for more in the PCA as well?
That's the easy part. It's the Eventbrite that's gonna chew up 2 or 3 hours for me.
I bet. What all is involved in the planning to sponsor ruling elders to General Assembly? I think you're in the midst of a fundraising drive now, Charlie. Is that right?
Yes, we always are. And if you want to give, you can go to moreinthepca.org and find the donate button and donate there. That's the easiest way to do it. And we welcome and appreciate all donations. But basically, we just review applications. It takes some research. We do some interviewing for folks. Then we put them in our hotel room block if they need a hotel room. And we'll also help folks with registration fees if they need that. Or in some cases, some travel expenses, especially if they're coming from the Pacific Coast. The one change that we've made this year is we finally got access, along with everyone else, to the administrative committee's data. And so now we know, we have a general idea of what the budget of each of these sending churches is. Yeah. And, you know, cause a lot of these guys that apply, they have no idea. But we ended up having to deny some folks, including some folks that we had approved in the past, because we just feel like their church has a large enough budget that they should be able to send these folks on their own. And we want to make sure that our donors' dollars are directed towards, you know, tiny little churches like, you know, Harvestwood Covenant, where I'm on session now. You know, we get about 40 people on a Lord's Day, and it's out in the middle of a rural area. And these are the elders that we feel that the General Assembly and the presbyteries need to hear from. You know, we can't be a denomination of, by, and for suburbanites and big city folks.
So you'll check this PCA statistical reports page to see what, when you say you've access to the AC data, I assume it's this statistical report where it gives the budget breakdown for, well, not the breakdown, but the total receipts for any given congregation that has submitted those. And so, you know, a church with, you know, $10 million in giving, you're probably not going to be able to send one of their ruling elders because they should have the funds to do that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's, you know, they need to prioritize that.
Yeah. And that's a good way to put it, that they need to make it a priority. Ross, why would you say that it's important, vitally important, that ruling elders be at the General Assembly and not just leave it to the teaching elders? I know we've heard Charlie's perspective, but why do you think this should be a priority for congregations that can?
Yeah, Charlie did mention that a little bit earlier. You know, I think I do think that there is some value in having people that are, you know, I try not to say the quote unquote real world. You know, it's not, I don't think that's fair, but at the same time, I do think that there is some added value and perspective with people working in other spheres. You know, I do think, though, ultimately, the importance is not necessarily just because we give a different perspective, but because it's the way our polity works. And so, you know, in the same way, like, it wouldn't be necessarily great if it was 100% ruling elders and zero teaching elders. So we are looking for that parity. And, you know, I do hope to be a part of a PCA General Assembly one day where it is a 50-50 split or something like that. You know, that would be indeed. Great. Or even the, you know, even up to the, I guess, technically like 66.6 versus 33.3, you know, that's probably, maybe if I was post-millennial, I believe that could happen sometime. But but for the meantime, it's great having a ruling elder community when you get there, and I've very much appreciated what Moore has done to facilitate some of those things, because it can feel very isolating. Is not the right word, but everyone else seems to know each other, and so. When you show up, and so it can sometimes be difficult just to feel like you're a part of it. And so, you know, our church is small. You know, we're just coming out of the 30 to 50 average attendance phase, and so I'm really hoping that next year in our budget, as we've continued to grow a little bit here and there, that it's something that. Not only is it something that we can prioritize of being able to fund ruling elders to go out of our budget, but, you know, even potentially seeing what we can do to give back to Moore. Something I had thought about, and maybe it's worth talking about, is, you know, churches that have budgets, you know, maybe a budget, $2,000, $5,000, whatever the number is, $10,000 for sending elders to GA. You know, I've often thought whatever is left over of that at the end of it could very easily be donated to Moore. And if you get enough churches that do that, that could be a really easy, non-intrusive way to raise funds for Moore and the PCA, and also give back. So, you know, if you budget for $5,000, you're probably not going to be landing right at the $5,000 mark, but, you know, maybe it's, you know, $4,600 and you've got $400 to donate to Moore. So I think that'd be worth a lot of sessions considering. I know it's something that I'll be bringing up in future years as soon as we're kind of at that place.
Yeah, I know the session that I serve, you know, I think one year one of our elders got some help from Moore to attend, and then I think the next year we had budgeted for two elders to go, and they both went. And then the next year we budgeted for two ruling elders to go, and only one could go. And so I think I texted Charlie and I say, hey, we're only going to send one ruling elder, but you know, if we pay for the hotel, will you pay the registration for, you know, this other elder? And, you know, so we've been able to do kind of an all of the above with Moore. So thankful for the work that they do. Well, Charlie, how many elders has Moore been able to send to the General Assembly over the was it the 6 years of your existence? Is that what it was? 6 years? I don't do math anymore.
Yeah. Well, we started in 2018 with two elders, and then 2019 we sent five, and then 2020 there wasn't a General Assembly because of COVID. We have peaked so far, and in 21. Where we helped 49 elders go. And that was just a huge leap. I think people just got fired up about various issues that were percolating through the denomination over the 2 year break since the last assembly. But since then it's settled down a little bit. We've sent about, we'll send 31 this year. We're going to be helping 31 elders this year. And you know, that's basically the range that it settled down into is 30 to 40 each year. So like overall, we probably have, you know, sent, I guess, 150 elders over 6 years. I wouldn't say that that's enough to, you know, swing a vote or something on the floor. But there were some close ones that I think we were able to make a difference with.
Yeah, yeah, and that's an interesting point that you raise. I know a couple of years ago, Scott Sauls, formerly of the National Partnership, said, "I do hope that this experience with 23 overtures, 23 and 37, is a wake-up call concerning how easy and wrong it is to stack the assembly to achieve outcomes that mischaracterize the PCA as a whole." So this was in 2021 regarding the St. Louis General Assembly. And I think another ruling elder kind of pushed back and says, "What do you mean the General Assembly is stacked?" And he says, "Yes, the assembly was unquestionably stacked. The presbyteries are currently demonstrating the evidence of it." It's strange you find this funny. So, Charlie, you're not stacking the assembly as you see it?
Absolutely not. I don't think that we would if we. I don't think that's possible that you could stack a 2,000. Commissioner assembly,
deliberative assembly of 2,000.
You know, yeah, that's a lot of people, and yeah. you would need to be bringing hundreds to each convention to really make a dent in that. And you know, even if it was possible, that's not what Moore is here to do.
Right. And I think Teaching Elder Sauls did retract that statement, but it was certainly circulating on social media. And I think there was even an allegation that Moore or the GRN was hiring a political consultant or some such nonsense going around. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you this. Let's see, where is it? Yes, here. Jim Kessler of the now defunct National Partnership giving his guidance for some issues before the assembly. I think this was the 2019 assembly. He said this: "Yes, we run the risk of the wrong moderator selecting the wrong committee." This is the Sexuality Study Committee in view. "So let's not lose the moderator vote. Win. We have to be there. We have to get our elders in the room at GA. We have to find ways to finance our friends that can't afford it. We have to show up. The only way to get the wrong committee is to win the right to a good committee. You have to show up." So there you have Jim Kessler advocating for financing our friends to go to General Assembly. Now, I think I just learned today that y'all were founded in 2018. Is that right? I was going to ask, did you get this idea from James Kessler? But it sounds like maybe he got the idea from you.
Maybe. We were founded in 2017. And, 2017. You know, maybe Pastor Sauls was projecting. I don't
know.
Yeah. But, if I can hop in there real quick,
please.
One of the things with Scott Sauls' tweet. I think I remember might have been Brad Isbell did an article like actually like doing the math to see, you know, of the ruling elders that were brought out from Moore and how it was an absurd claim that. That would have a direct effect. Also, you know, with the second tweet that Scott Sauls put up, but you know, the presbyteries are currently demonstrating the evidence of that. It's still passed more than half of the presbyteries. So something that was also, you know, so it passed a majority in GA. It passed a majority, although not a supermajority, but it did pass a majority in the presbytery. So I don't think that that's actually factually correct.
So what you're suggesting, if I understand correctly, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that maybe Pastor Sauls or Teaching Elder Sauls was just out of step with the majority of PCA elders in his position on those items.
Yes, that's correct. And you know, one of the it can be a frustrating part about Presbyterian polity, but it's also one of the beauties of Presbyterian polity is that it often takes, you know, we move slow. We like big, you know, big majority votes, and you know, there's opportunities for the minority to be able to voice their opinion. So, because it doesn't reach, I think it was. is it 68% of presbyteries approving it, doesn't mean that it's not clearly the will of the body.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Moore sending, was it 49 or 31 ruling elders to General Assembly is not going to probably sway, you know, any vote one way or another. But what you do get is additional perspectives from, you know, small church elders, elders of, at churches that are your typical PCA church size. I think I heard a couple of years ago that the average PCA church has about 80 to 100 people on a Sunday. And a church with 80 to 100 people on a Sunday probably can't afford to send three people to General Assembly. Many of them can, I'm sure, but most of them probably cannot. So having that perspective of your typical PCA congregation, you know, what do we believe the Bible confesses, the Bible teaches as it is confessed in our standards. So this is, I think, an effort that's really at the core of being Presbyterian, obviously having ruling elders as well as teaching elders, but so vital to the health of the PCA. To get these guys together. So, brothers, what are you optimistic about regarding the PCA right now?
I'm optimistic about the direction. I feel like we've finally gotten to the other side of these overtures on homosexually inclined pastors. And we finally found something that we could pass. I expect the most recent overture to get passed this upcoming GA.
Yeah.
I feel like a critical mass of progressives are moving on, are finding churches more in line with their perspective, and having realized that the PCA is not in line with their perspective. I'm also encouraged by a new crop of teaching elders coming out of our seminaries. I've over the past 2 years, I've met some really strong, good confessional teaching elders in their, early 30s. And they're planting churches. They're going out into the denomination, and they're really renewing the confessional wing of the PCA. And it makes me want to stay. You know, I've had various experiences at different PCA churches that have made me despair almost for the direction of the PCA. But I am encouraged about our future, and I think this is the denomination where confessionalists can plant their flag and defend the confession and be able to pass along a healthy, vital, Reformed and Presbyterian church to the next generations.
Yeah, yeah. Ross, what about you? You haven't been in quite as long as Charlie, but right. what makes you optimistic for the PCA at this point?
I mean, much of a lot of the same things. You know, I am eager to see excited that there's been an energy behind those who are would be described as more confessional or whatever terminology, and I think that's very exciting. I think that there's never been maybe a time in American history where there's been as many quality reform seminaries in the country, where there's enough, there's a lot of options. You can certainly at least in the last, 100 years or so, that a lot of opportunities to go to have like multiple choices of going to a great seminary where you're going to be confessionally instructed, obviously, in the Word of God, emphasis on the ordinary means of grace. And so I'm very encouraged about that.
Even Indiana has a great Reformed seminary of all places, right?
At Mid-America. Yeah, that's right. Mid-America.
It's not just a Deep South, East Coast, that even places where you might not think have great seminary options.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities, and there's a lot of distance learning opportunities as well for people who are interested in that type of thing. You know, that's something that I actually, out of curiosity, I audited Fred Greco's Birmingham Theological Seminary PCA Polity course. I think it was last fall, and really benefited from it. Learned a lot. You know, an opportunity to ask Reverend Greco questions about PCA Polity. You know, I was at that time specifically very involved in a couple of things within our presbytery on some commissions, and so I was able to ask him questions, and made himself available for me to be able to ask him a lot of questions. So there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about the direction of the PCA, and I'm certainly excited to be a part of the PCA.
Wow, great. What concerns you now about the PCA as ruling elders who work for a living?
Well, what concerns me is that people might get complacent decide that the battles of 2021 and 2022 are over and done with, and we can all just stay home and let the TEs take over the General Assembly again. And it's not Presbyterian. Mm. It's not healthy. And for us, and it's not, it doesn't bode well for the future if we let that happen. I think people need, once they're engaged, they need to stay engaged and, stick with this, with the courts of the church through thick and thin, because every meeting they're deciding important things, every presbytery meeting, every General Assembly, important things are decided, and the ruling elders need to be there, or else they're just not going to make Presbyterian decisions.
That's a valuable, aphorism that you would, if you stay engaged, because so much of being an effective elder is the longevity of it. That, I started going to General Assembly back in 2010, before I even had met my wife, and just observing as a seminary student, okay, so this is what is happening. So by the time I was a commissioner, I had a pretty good grasp of what was going on. And, I'm thankful that First Pres Jackson, they didn't make me take a week of vacation. They said, if you want to go to General Assembly, we'll pay you for, we'll pay you to go to General Assembly, so you know what's going on. I was an intern there, and that's so helpful. So, it would be really, it's unfortunate when especially ruling elders, they've gone for a couple of years and then, well, I can't go, but ruling elders for the most part work for a living. So you maybe not able to take off a week every year. In June, to go and spend $250 a night on a hotel and parking and meals,
right. And burn through all that vacation time that you'd rather use on your family
at the beach, right, or the mountains. Yeah, Ross, what about you? What concerns do you have for the PCA?
Yeah, I mean, similar concerns as Charlie. One of the things, I don't know if it's coming from Midwest, from the Midwest, but there's kind of two outlooks. There's pessimistic and expecting things to turn bad soon. So, I do find myself sometimes, if I'm not checking myself, going into that frame of mind. So, but I do think that there's, something to that, that, you have to, during the good times, you do have to prepare for future bad times. And so, I think this is an opportunity to really not be, and this is in no way saying that anyone's doing this, but not being triumphalistic and not being, all of our problems are solved, while at the same time not trying to run people out. But we do have the opportunity to strengthen the denomination, look to the future, think about how we can be raising up confessional church planters. That's something that I'm very passionate about. Often the type of person who at least the last decade or so has been attracted to being a church planter often is a little bit more a little bit more fast and loose with maybe the ways that they'll do it. Often due to wanting to, just prioritize the mission. They want to reach people. They want to preach the gospel. But you know, I think that it's something that we can really be planning for now and really having in mind, how do we plant confessional churches throughout the areas of the country that don't have many now? You know, Fort Wayne, it's a great city. We're looking to plant churches. We're not necessarily in a financial place to be able to assume all of that all at once, but you know, Fort Wayne's a great city and often named as one of the best cities to live in. If you just Google it, often run into people throughout town that say, you know, it would be great if, you know, that they came to Fort Wayne by Google searching, where's the best place to live in America. So all that to say, if there's any confessionally inclined future church planters, I'd love to talk. So, you know, we would love to have four confessional gospel preaching, grounded in the Word of God, PCA churches within Fort Wayne.
And is that within Great Lakes Presbytery?
Yes.
And it's one of the great presbyteries, one of the best presbyteries in the denomination, right? Great Lakes Presbytery.
Yes, so. It's an outstanding presbytery. And so there's no reason not to think of us. So please, if there's any that are listening, please reach out to me.
Yeah. And one of the things both of you, you know, I think alluded to is that, you know, we need guys to go to General Assembly every year. We need teaching elders and ruling elders, because every year we vote on the nominees for our permanent committees and agencies. And it is those permanent committees and that are setting the agenda for the agency. So if you would like to see, for example, as Ross says, MNA plant more of a certain type of church plant, well then a great way to see that vision come to pass is by electing more of those elders who share that vision to the MNA permanent committee. And likewise, you know, we've had people on this program who have concerns about Covenant College. Well, you know, go to General Assembly and elect elders to the Covenant College board who share your concerns. And the only way to get to vote on those nominees is to attend GA every year. You know, we've got a lot of overtures from your presbytery to the south there, Ross, dealing with procedure and discipline and rules. And you know, one of the concerns I have is that people are going to see the overtures this year and just hit snooze because,
right,
well, those aren't very exciting. Those aren't dealing with, you know, sexuality. Well, but you know, those overtures, and, you know, this is my perspective as a full-time teaching elder, those overtures from Central Indiana Presbytery and their parallels are actually more important than the sexuality overtures that we considered, because those overtures from Central Indiana Presbytery and their parallels throughout the denomination will change how we discipline, if we discipline, and what the process leading up to discipline looks like. So just because it's not an exciting doesn't appear to be exciting, doesn't mean it's not important. So you've got committees to vote on, and we've got polity changes that will be very significant.
Well, what's also challenging with that is it's not always apparent to, you know, even like me as a ruling elder, like what are the implications of this long down the line? And so it does take more more reflection and kind of asking questions and trying to get a better idea of what's going on. Because it although it probably will have, you know, large impacts, far-reaching impacts in the future, it's not always immediately apparent what those impacts could be just on face value. Whereas with some of the sexuality overtures and things like that, it's quite clear. Yes. And so they are very important.
Yeah, we can't think that the sexuality overtures were a quick fix. I mean, we have overtures now that have the potential to change the very fabric of our polity, to, you know, even outsource where the church courts are no longer doing the business of a church court, but just outsource that to those who would describe themselves, who would self-identify even as experts rather than elders. Well, Ross, what are your goals for the PCA? What would you like to see the PCA reflecting on at her 75th anniversary?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about, maybe not necessarily bound to the 75 year mark, but just having young children and wanting them, you know, bringing them up in a Reformed church. It's something that I have given a lot of thought about, and just what is important. And, you know, a lot of my, I do feel like that a lot of my effort and energy is you know, grounded on. I want there to be solid churches for my children as they reach adulthood and have children and the like. And so, I think being as focused as possible as we can on being regulated by the Word of God is something that now obviously there's going to be here and there disagreements about what exactly that means, but that we're all of the same mind, that's something that is important to us, that we're going to be regulated by the Word of God, what it teaches us and how we are to worship, the things that we're to emphasize. And so, I do think it's very important that we do that. And I am hopeful that, in the next 25 years, that will be something that is of main priority for the PCA. And, there are reasons to think that we are moving in that direction. And I hope that it continues.
Yeah. Charlie, what about you? What would you like to see? We just had our 50th and we did a lot of reflection and soul searching. What would you like to see celebrated as the defining characteristics of this quarter century, 75 or 25 years from now?
Well, I hope to live that long. Two, I would love to look back on 25 years of faithful discipleship. All the churches, all the denominations in America are becoming more homogenized. I think people are sorting, into different denominations. We referenced that a little bit earlier, and the PCA needs to maintain its position as a faithful follower of the Bible, of the confessions, and raising our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Mm-hmm. We're in danger in our culture for sure. And there's very few institutions left that people can rely on. And the PCA needs to prove to its people that it is a reliable institution. And we can do that by faithfully discipling and by standing firm on the Word of God.
Mm. It seems like you elders are both all about, the Bible. The Bible that is, it's...
Who would have thought?
Who would have thunk it, right? And yeah. Reformed elders, the only rule of faith and practice. So that's what denominational faithfulness looks like. That's what faithfulness as a father looks like. Faithfulness as an employee, as an employer looks like is manifesting those biblical principles in the way we live and work together. Well, any final thoughts as we bring it in for a close here?
I'd just like to thank you for having me on and to talk about more in the PCA. We're looking forward to a great assembly, and we're very grateful for all the support we've gotten from various corners all throughout the denomination, and we'd love to have more. This has always been a grassroots organization, and I want to keep it that way. And so far, it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, and people can find your website morein.thepca.org.
Correct.
And there'll be a link to the Eventbrite, which is out today. Or if it's not out by the time you're watching this or listening to this, that'll be out later on their website today, right? Oh, they can link to the Eventbrite from morein.thepca.org.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Ross, anything? You've got a house full of kids. What? How do you balance presbytery participation and five kids? Praise the Lord.
Yeah. I mean, it can be a lot of work at times, but I was listening to, something from, Dr. Bob Godfrey from Ligonier, actually, which I mentioned earlier. I was listening to it a few weeks ago, and it was talking about, just the rise of Finneyism in the United States. And, obviously we'd have significant differences with Finneyism at large and specifically with Charles Finney's personal theology as well, which is maybe even more problematic. But, you know, something that Dr. Godfrey pointed out is that, you know, he did put in the work. You know, that was something that Finney was a hard worker and, you know, was on the circuit, was preaching all the time and was organizing and doing a lot of those things. And so, you know, I do think that's important for us to keep in mind as well, is that God ordains the ends, but also the means in which we do them. And so we, you know, this is the types of things that this life is about, loving the bride of Christ and serving her. And so I would just encourage all of us, whether teaching elders or ruling elders, that this is a big piece of what it means to glorify God is serving the church and getting out there. And it definitely can be difficult. You know, we had just last Saturday had a called presbytery meeting, you know, a couple hours away, and I decided to take the whole family, and they hung out in the vestibule or whatever they call that of the church. And there was another family that did the same thing. And so they were able to play together, and then 2 hours back, and nice little family outing. But obviously very grateful for the patience of my wife, and as well, her being all in as well on this being a primary means of ways that I can seek to glorify God in my life. So just that this is, you know, this will take work. This does take time. And we do need to have, you know, as Colossians 3 would say, an eternal heavenly mindset. You know, we are to have our eyes on the things that are above. And one of the ways that we can do that is, you know, we're not always hyper-focused on, you know, our attendance going from 74 to 77 average, you know, a certain percentage growth over the next year. And so, but being mindful that, you know, that we are going to be on this earth just a millisecond in a lot of ways. And so we are a part of something bigger, and that we should be mindful of that.
The temple of the living God. We are but living stones in the dwelling place of our God by his Spirit. Yes. Wow. Well, thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for joining the conversation on the Westminster Standard, which is the podcast of Jude 3. For additional resources or to make a donation, do visit our website, jude3pca.org. I decided to depart from our fortnightly distribution schedule this week to make sure we could release an episode today so that our listeners would know about the More in the PCA Fellowship event on the Wednesday during General Assembly. Please visit their website, moreinthepca.org, to get your tickets. And so join us again next week as we hear from PCA Pastor Doug Servin regarding his work to bring an overture that honors the memory of slain Covenant Theological Seminary student Elizabeth McIntosh. I'll talk to you then.